Blog Talk Radio.
It is Thursday, May 18th, 2017. This is the PW Torch Livecast Impact Post Show. I am PWTorch.com's Mike McMahon with PWTorch.com's Andrew Stochek. Andrew, how are you this evening?
Mike, I'm doing well. I must say that was a pretty excellent way to end the show.
Yeah, I'd say this is a pretty good show overall. It was actually a thumbs up show for me. Overall, before we sort of get to the rundown here, what were your thoughts on the show as a whole? Would you give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
I would give it a thumbs up as well. There was a couple of things on there that bothered me, a couple of recurring issues, but overall, I mean, you put that main event in there, it's kind of hard to give it a thumbs down.
I would agree. Actually, you know what? Could you call right back? For some reason, there's a lot of interference in the phone line.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I will call you right back.
All right, awesome. So Andrew's gonna drop off and call right back here. But yeah, I know he said he thought had it as a thumbs up show. I had it as a thumbs up show as well. I thought that this was one of the better episodes of this year for sure. Definitely so far, at least for me, my favorite episode that they've aired over this set of tapings. I thought that the matches were good. I thought the opening tag match with LAX beating Garza Jr. and Laredo Kid was really good. And then I also thought that the EC3 James Storm match was a good match and, of course, set up for something down the road as well. And then the main event delivered. I thought it was a unique ending to that match. There was a segment to the main event that I really liked. It was actually earlier in the show. Andrew and I will get to it as we break down the episode sort of segment by segment. But the video that they aired, and it was early in the show, but the video they aired to sort of hype the Ultimate X match, it was with Low Ki and Trevor Lee and Andrew Everett, all had lines, all had speaking parts, you know, sort of soundbite interview clips in that video package. They also, at the same time, were playing playing highlights of AJ Styles in Ultimate X matches. They were playing highlights of Jerry Lynn in Ultimate X matches. But more importantly, they had guys on the air in a video package who were telling the audience how important the match was and how important the title was to them and why they either wanted to retain it or why they wanted to win it. It was one of my favorite portions of the show, was not only the Ultimate X match, but that video package that they aired probably in the first half hour. Was one of the things that I thought was really, really well done on this show. Andrew, I think we got you back.
Yeah, am I sounding all right?
Oh, much better now. All right, well,
okay,
Andrew
cool.
And I are going to run down this show, and then we'll be taking your calls as well. I got a couple of people on the line. Give us a call at 515-605-9345. Let's start right from the beginning, Andrew. They opened the show again with a match right off the bat, LAX defeated Garza Jr. and Laredo Kid in about 14 minutes. This was a semifinal match in the GFW Tag Team Championship Tournament. I thought this was a pretty good match. I thought it was a really good match to open the show. You know, they contend, especially these guys, I think could get a little too fast, you know, sort of your typical cruiserweight X division match where things can get almost a little too fast paced, but I thought they kept things slow enough here where they told a pretty good story. And they kept Garza Jr. and Laredo Kid strong, really looking like they were going to have a win over the Impact Tag Champions if it wasn't for Diamante delivering a Hurricane Rana to, I think it was Garza Jr., off the apron. So they sort of get a little bit of an out there with the loss, but I thought they looked like they could hang with the tag team champs. And overall, this was a pretty solid way to start the show.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, this is really strong. So often on here, I compare Raw and SmackDown to Impact. On Raw on Monday, 16 minutes into the show, Seth Rollins came out and said nobody came here to watch people talk. They came to watch people fight. that took 16 minutes to get to any action, whereas Impact tonight gave us action right away. So I thought that was a big improvement. And yeah, started off the show on a pretty hot start.
Yeah, I like this match a lot, and I thought it did a lot for both teams. After that, they went to a backstage segment. Bruce Pritchard's on the phone. Magnus walks up and told Pritchard that he cost him the GFW title and his golden ticket to Slammiversary. Bruce Pritchard basically told Magnus that, hey, they're not in contention anymore. There's nothing he can do about it. And Magnus said that there was something he could do, and then he walked off. They aired a video on Laurel Van Ness and her history with Braxton Sutter and Kongo Kong. And then from there, Kongo Kong beat Braxton Sutter on the other side of a commercial break at about 3 minutes and 30 seconds. A little bit of a squash for Sutter in the sense that, you know, he lost in just over 3 minutes here, but I thought they did a decent job trying to keep him strong because he was delivering most of the offense in the match. He wasn't able to knock Kong off his feet. He delivered a shoulder tackle at one point. He was throwing a lot of kicks. Took it like a monster would take it, never left his feet, and then ends up splashing Sutter in the corner and getting the win. I don't know if it's going to work. I don't think it really was particularly effective because in the end of the day, Braxton Sutter still lost the match in 3 minutes or 3.5 minutes. But it looked like they were trying to do their best to still make him look good in a match that he was going to lose relatively quickly.
Yeah, I really liked how they did this as well. Kongo Kong hasn't been knocked over yet, so I think when they do get to that, that's going to mean something. And I think Braxton got to save some face a bit by losing and then just getting right back up and issuing out a challenge for next week. However, I thought it was a big miss when he referred to Sienna as a dude or a guy or something.
Yeah.
I don't know why he did that, and I thought that made him look pretty bad.
Yeah, it was the promo after the match, I think, was there were good intentions there, like you said. He called Sienna, he was talking to KM and called him big and fat, a big fat boy,
mm-hmm.
and then told him to grab his dude cousin and bring Kongo Kong and that hot mess Van Ness, which I like a little bit of a rhyme there, but and then just said next week a tag team match, me and Shara against you two. But I thought it was a little weird that he basically said bring all four of you guys, and next week it's going to be a tag team match. I don't know if he stumbled over something there, but Josh Matthews ended up having to clarify it on commentary just a couple of seconds later and said that the challenge was Sutter and Shara against KM and Kongo Kong. So Kong, to me, continues to look really, really impressive. Like you said, he hasn't been off his feet yet. And I think, you know, it sort of gave me the impression that sooner or later, probably do something with him as far as the world title is concerned. Maybe not sooner than later. That might be further down the road. I think if that's going to happen, sooner than later, they need to get him away from Laurel Van Ness and get him out of this mess of a storyline here. But I do think that maybe, and it could be down the road, it could be a year from now, it could be a year and a half from now, but if he's given the right mouthpiece, and maybe that mouthpiece is Josh Matthews, they could build this guy into something where he could be, against the right type of babyface, a pretty good heel to be going after the world title.
I could see that too. I mean, his gimmick is similar to Umaga's. But Umaga did pretty well in entering the main event. I mean, Kongo Kong isn't going to be world champ for 9 months or something, but I think he could be good enough, and if they build him up right, he could be a guy that enters into the main event, works the program, comes out, maybe comes back later. And those are valuable people to have. I also forgot to mention, like, I'm not a big fan of Shara kind of chasing him off. I know why they're doing it. Because they're going to India and want to make him look good, but I'll just never see anything in that guy.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I thought it was a little weird that he was the one coming out to make the save. Really no explanation there, but yeah, I agree. The reason they're doing it is because they're heading to India, and you have to assume he's going to figure into being a big part of that show. You know, I'm really, this is a little off topic, I'm looking forward even more to those TV tapings in India after listening to Jinder Mahal on Chris Jericho's podcast this week. And I know there's some tie-in here with PW Podcast, of course. But Jinder Mahal was talking about just the fans in India and how he was mainly talking about how Great Khali is so over there that they were running shows that were sponsored by the government, but were drawing 30 to some shows were drawing 30, some 60,000 people in stadiums out there with Khali as the main event. And I'm not saying that Mahabali Shira is going to draw 30,000 people for Impact, but you know, maybe there is something to be said for if you can get a guy like that over in that country, it could do well for the environment, the setting and the environment and the building and trying to make something work there.
Yeah, I've actually talked to Nick Dinsmore, Eugene, about him. He lives in the same town I do, and he helped train Mahabali Shira. And he sees quite a bit in him. He thinks he's got something, so maybe there is more to the character than I haven't quite caught on yet.
Yeah, you know, I like they probably need to invest some more television time in him, too. I mean, at one point, I think it was back during, the end of the Destination America run, right before they started the World Title Series, they were really putting a lot of steam behind Mahabali Shira. And again, it was right before they were supposed to go to India and had to cancel that television taping. But they need to do more, I think, to just tell us who he is and what he's about. I mean, for a while, he was just the dancing guy, and no one really knew why he was dancing. But yeah, I mean, there could be something there, but like you said, there's a lot of work to be done. After that, they went to highlights of Andrew Everett's win in a four-way match last week, beating Matt Sydal, Desmond Xavier, and Caleb Conley. Obviously, Everett's win was shown, but they also, I thought, went really out of their way to highlight Desmond Xavier here as well. And then they went to a backstage interview that was taped after that match last week where Sydal really put over Andrew Everett. And at one point towards the end of the interview said that he hoped Everett went on to win Ultimate X later on in the show. So when they had their one-on-one match, it would be for the title. Then they aired what, to me, was one of the best things about this show, and I was talking a little bit about it earlier, the video on the Ultimate X match. They aired a lot of highlights, early highlights with guys like AJ Styles and Jerry Lynn, and then just had Low-Ki and Trevor Lee and Andrew Everett all have these little sound bites where they just talked about how important the X Division was to them and why they wanted to win the title. And that is something that I think across the board is missing a lot in pro wrestling. Just guys, especially in title matches, talking about why it's important and why they want to win it. And I thought that this video package did two things really well. It did that. It had guys talking about how important the title was to them. And it also sort of erased some of the negative feelings that I think some people, longtime Impact fans, probably have about the X Division. It's sort of toiled away for a number of years now. It's been there. There's really been no steam behind it. There's been no meaning behind it. But they tried to bring you back to a day when it really meant something. I mean, when the X Division was headlined by AJ Styles and Jerry Lynn, it was the highlight of the show. And I think that this was a good effort to try to hook some of those longtime fans into remembering how important the division was at one point.
Yeah, I thought this was excellent. If you watch like WWE videos, I think in the Cruiserweight Classic, a lot of those guys were reminiscing about the Nitro era and talking about guys like Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio. So it was cool to see TNA or Impact build up their own lineage that way and have those guys talk about how much the X Division influenced them as kids. I mean, I thought that was a really nice touch. It made me miss some of those guys like Lynn and the Motor City Machine Guns and whatnot. So I mean, if nothing else, they are really trying to undo the past 10 years worth of damage to that X Division. So that is a very big positive so far.
Yeah, I'd agree. Then from there, Mackenzie Mitchell interviewed Karen Jarrett. She said that next week there would be the mixed tag match we all knew was coming. Alicia Edwards and Eddie Edwards against Angelina Love and Davey Richards. Then they went to EC3 and James Storm after a break. This match went about 16 minutes. James Storm won by disqualification after EC3 whipped a referee. Then after the match, he would end up throwing Bruce Pritchard to the mat. This is where Pritchard came out after the match and cut a promo setting up a triple threat next week, James Storm, EC3, and Magnus. And I was a little confused. I wasn't completely sure that this was a number one contenders match because it wasn't really clear in the promo. I think Jeremy Borash on commentary did say later on in the show that it was to determine the number one contender to the Impact title. So this was an interesting match. I mean, they went with the non-finish of the DQ in order to extend it a little bit, which I'm fine with, because I thought they did it in a way that was believable. You know, it wasn't like they just had a random count out or random interference. You had EC3 whipping the referee with the belt the same way he did James Storm the previous week. There was a couple of holes for me here. I thought Magnus on commentary was okay, although he seemed to go back and forth between heel and babyface a little bit. I mean, clearly he's supposed to be a heel, but he's making fun of Josh Matthews, and then which is something, you know, the general viewer would be behind. Then seconds later, he's calling the fans a bunch of mouth breathers, and there was a little bit of inconsistency there. But overall, I like this storyline of EC3 being just unhinged, and I think running the DQ the way they did with him just attacking the referee just sort of takes that crazy EC3 character a little bit to a new level.
Yeah, I like that part a lot. EC3, we talked before about how he's a much better suited as a heel, and I think he's doing really strong work. Overall, though, this was a miss for me. The announcing, this was the low point of the night for them. Well, one or two low points of the night for them. At this point, like, it was such a personal feud, and it was such a good attack last week and so violent. They needed to be focused on this match and how it's personal and how it's a grudge. But it's where Josh really just started arguing and talking about how he's better than Jeremy Borash and all that stuff. I didn't feel James Storm really lived up to the intensity he needed to, because with that violent beating last week, he should have came out swinging and just been incredibly intense the whole time. The match is fine. It was just a few holes for me.
Yeah, you know, the other thing I don't like, and I think it was in the next break, Josh Matthews said that he had been told that EC3 may be fined, but wasn't going to be suspended for attacking a referee. It wasn't just attacking a referee. I mean, here's a guy who attacked a referee and then took one of your Authority figures and attacked him after this match. I almost feel like from a storyline, from a rule standpoint, if you're a wrestling company, you need to establish rules for the heels to break. Well, he just attacked a referee and he attacked, you know, one of the guys who's running the company. Why, you know, you need to sell me, if you're running the creative to the show, you need to sell me on why EC3 isn't pulled from that match next week. I mean, why, if you're a heel, are you not running around just attacking Karen Jarrett and, you know, beating up Dutch Mantel until you get what you want? I mean, that's essentially what EC3 did on this show. He beat up a referee and then beat up Bruce Pritchard and still gets to stay in a number one contenders match. It just, that to me need some explaining, and maybe they'll do it next week. Maybe they'll come up with a reason about why they didn't suspend him. But to me, you know, that you're just leaving the door open. Why aren't all your heels beating up everybody in charge until they get their way? That's something I think that you need to explain. If you're going to say he's not going to be suspended, you can't just leave it at that. You know, you need to give a reason why you have a heel that just beat up one of the guys in charge, beat his boss, isn't going to get suspended.
Yeah, that's a great point. That popped into my mind too. Like, why are all these guys being rewarded for ruining a match? That didn't make any sense. And especially now, like, Pritchard should, you know, he needs to take action against EC3, but I'm assuming they'll go forward with the match. But yeah, something should happen to him.
All right, we'll finish recapping the show on the other side of our first break. You can give us a call at 515-605-9345. Going into our first break, Andrew brings us our first trivia question of the week. Who did James Storm face in his NXT debut? These have some NXT themes this week. So who did James Storm face in his NXT debut? We'll have the answer to that question. We'll finish breaking down the show, and then we'll get to your phone calls on the other side of the break. You are listening to the PW Torch Livecast.
Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch Livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link, and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar, as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the Livecast. Thank you.
All right, we're back in the PW Torch Livecast, and Andrew, who was or who did James Storm face in his NXT debut?
He faced off against Danny Burch, who is still in NXT right now. Basically just a squash, and Storm hit him with the 8-second ride. He used a different finishing move there for his he only had a couple matches, and then a few weeks later, I think, Bobby Roode came in, so just kind of bad timing on that part.
They're doing a whole bunch with Bobby Roode right now. You have to sort of think that at some point he's the centerpiece of NXT for now, sort of the same way Samoa Joe was and Nakamura was before him. But you would think that Bobby Roode is on his way to the main roster here at some point. To me, he's sort of the next guy to be called up.
Oh yeah, I would assume so. I'm kind of surprised he's not up already, but I imagine within the next couple months.
Yeah, it's almost, you know, they're in that spot where they've got NXT as a touring brand. They need someone to draw those crowds, especially when they're traveling and doing things like takeover specials this weekend from Chicago. So it almost delays, I think, how quickly they're going to bring some of those guys up. I think Joe fell into that category, and I think Nakamura fell into that category where, and even Finn Balor, I mean, they were ready long before they were brought up. But a lot of it had to do with you've got this third touring brand. You need someone to draw those crowds.
Yeah, and I think Roode just turned 40 not too long ago. So there comes a point where it's like, oh, you just got to call him up right now. Get him some money.
Yeah, get what you can out of him. Back to this week's edition of Impact. You can give us a call at 515-605-9345. We're going to answer some phone calls as soon as Andrew and I finish breaking down the show. Just remember, if you do give us a call when you're on hold, you've got to hit the number one. That'll put you in the caller queue. Right now we have 985-862 and 407 on hold. You can get on there as well at 515-605-9345. So after the EC3 James Storm match, they went to commercial break. They came back and another Rockstar Spud video aired. It ended with him telling Swoggle that he would be back next week, whether or not the doctors were going to give him an okay, and he was going to be back in the Impact Zone to get his revenge on Swoggle. This was sort of just the same videos that they've aired over the last several weeks.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad this one didn't do anything for me. For some reason, the last two kind of cracked me up at points, but I think it's time to end them, so I guess 3 weeks is about the right number, so I'm glad that's over with, and like we've talked about, hopefully Rockstar Spud can get back in the ring and do something relatively serious soon.
After that, Sienna retained the GFW women's title in about 3 minutes over ODB. A couple interesting things about this match. They ran a graphic over the screen right as the bell rang. Very similar to the way that WWE does before title matches, where it just said GFW women's title. It was just a quick little graphic. If you watch WWE, you've seen them a million times before championship matches. They did something similar here. It's the first time I can remember seeing it on Impact. But this was a relatively quick match, like I said, about 3 minutes. This felt like filler to me. I don't know why there was a random title match. And, you know, again, this is not something that Impact is alone guilty of, but why did ODB deserve a title shot here? You know, it'd be nice if someone gave some sort of explanation, even if it's just the announcer saying, hey, we have a championship committee and they voted her as number one contender and they booked the match for tonight. It just some reason why there was just this random title match unannounced in the middle of the show. That's sort of my one complaint. It just felt like filler. to me if you're going to have filler instead of wasting a Sienna ODB match, which could be a bigger match for your division. Take one of the your newer wrestlers and throw them in there with Sienna and just, you know, let her squash her. Give Sienna like a squash win over a no-name, someone that maybe you don't even have under full-time contract. That, to me, would have been better use of filler time than giving ODB a loss in 3 minutes here.
Yeah, I agree. A few weeks ago, they had that Battle Royal where they introduced like four or five new women, and then all we ever see is Ava Story. So that would have been a good role for her or somebody else. Yeah, like you said, I don't know what they're doing with ODB right now. They had her lose to Rosemary in 3 minutes, and now she just lost to Sienna in 3 minutes. It's just kind of a disappointing return for her.
Yeah, you know, it almost makes you wonder, is she just back for a couple of tapings to put over some of the new girls and then go back to, I mean, she has a business on the side, then get back to running her businesses again. I guess we'll have to see. Then came the highlight of the night for most of us. Jeremy Borash came to the ring, and Josh Matthews was in at his most annoying here, yelling and screaming and whining, as Borash said he had an attorney, and Matthews demanded to see the papers that Borash had, demanded to see who his attorney was. Essentially, what it boiled down to is Jeremy Borash had papers from an attorney that allowed him to come back and be the lead announcer on Impact. Matthews flipped out. Jeremy Borash brought out his attorney, who was Joseph Park. From there, Josh Matthews got even more annoying, yelled something. I think he said, "What are we all, 11 years old? We all know you're Abyss." And then he looked right at Joseph Park and said, "You're Abyss, you big, dumb idiot." And then the segment ended with Matthews walking off, calling everybody a bunch of marks and walking up the ramp. It should be noted here that Joseph Park challenged Josh Matthews to a tag team match at Slammiversary. He said it'd be Joseph Park and Jeremy Borash against Josh Matthews and a partner if he can find one. And then Matthews screamed five or six times, "I have to find a partner. I have to find a partner." Yep, that's what he's saying. So this, you know, if nothing else, they're putting an end date on it, I hope. We might have to wait until July 2nd, but it at least appears to me that this storyline is coming to an end, and that I can be positive about.
Yeah, that would be the only thing. At some point in the night, they said, like,
I don't have any other positive things to say about it other than I think it's coming to an end on July 2nd.
At some point in the night, they said Slammiversary is like 45 days away, and I'm like, oh my God, six more weeks of this. Brutal. And like you said, Josh Matthews can't just say something once. He can't say, like, "What are you doing here?" He has to say it like 10 times and scream it over and over and over. He's the most annoying thing in wrestling right now. And that segment was five times as long as it needed to be. Just have Joseph Park come out and then, you know, say JB is taking over, and then, I don't know, later say there's going to be a match. But, man, was that painfully drawn out.
Yeah. I was also really, and this is me nitpicking at this point, but I was also really annoyed by the fact that Josh Matthews was wearing ripped jeans with a shirt, tie, and sports coat. I don't know why that bothered me so much. But I was
he's big into fashion, though. He had his own podcast before on men's fashion.
That's right. But I just remember thinking, you know, you got to act like enough of a tool that you're going to also wear ripped jeans with a dress shirt. It just, I don't know why that bothered me so much, but yeah, it sort of summed up.
I like that he also had a school bag that he ran out with instead of a briefcase or something that made him look like an adult.
Well, you know what? He sounds like the annoying high school bully a lot in the verbiage, I guess, that he's been using over the course of his character. Just like you said, repeating things a million times. That's something that, you know, when you see high school kids argue, you think of like two 14-year-olds getting into an argument, and one of them going, "Oh, you want me to do that? You want me to do that? You want me to do that? You want me to?" Just, it's fitting, I guess, that he dresses like one too. And carries a bag like one, too. Anyway, then they went to a backstage segment where Alberto El Patron was talking about how much the GFW championship meant to him. One thing I wanted to hit on too. It's interesting that they're running the number one contenders triple threat match next week for the Impact title. After they built up last week, how El Patron winning the GFW title was going to give him, you know, an inside track to be in the main event at Slammiversary. Now, I know we've talked about on the show how there's a lot of guys in that world title picture. You've got Lashley, who is the champion. You've got El Patron, Magnus, James Storm, EC3. You've got a lot of guys in that world title picture. It almost leads me to believe that, okay, maybe they're going to do something with a triple threat or even a fatal four-way for the world title at Slammiversary, because you would think that Lashley, obviously, as a champion, is going to be in the match. You would have to think that El Patron's going to be in the match. Maybe the winner of that triple threat could find himself in the match too. I got a gut feeling that we're going to end up with a triple threat or a four-way title match at Slammiversary.
Yeah, I would assume so too. That is confusing as well, because Magnus keeps referring to the GFW title as the golden ticket. And if that was the golden ticket, that was supposed to be his shot at number one contender, but it's not. It never was, apparently. So I don't know where they're going with this. I'm kind of more fearful than I am excited.
Yeah, we'll have to see where they go with it, because for a while it looked like it was just going to be a straight unification match, and it very well could still be, but it does look like they might be giving some other guys a chance to get involved in that match. We're going to take our second break, then we're going to come back. We just got to talk about the main event, and then we're going to get to your phone calls, I promise, at 515-605-9345. Again, just make sure you hit the number one. That'll put you in the caller queue. And then, before we go to our second break, it's our second trivia question. Which wedding did EC3 ruin in NXT? Of course, at the time, he was known as Derek Bateman, but which wedding did EC3/Derek Bateman ruin when he was a member of the NXT roster? We're going to take a quick break, be back. Andrew and I will talk about the main event, and then we're going to get right to your phone calls at 515-605-9345 right here in the PW Torch Livecast.
If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week, and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch Livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com.
All right, back here on the PW Torch Livecast. Answer to our second trivia question. Andrew, which wedding did EC3/Derek Bateman ruin when he was a member of NXT?
Unfortunately, he interrupted the wedding of Maxine and Johnny Curtis. this is like 2012, 2011. It is one of the goofiest things you'll see. And just to further, like, it just blows my mind how much things change in wrestling, because Katrina, Maxine is now Katrina in Lucha Underground. She's like an undead god. Johnny Curtis is Fandango. And then EC3 is the relative of Dixie Carter. Like, you would have never predicted that 5 years ago.
Yeah, I wouldn't say so. I actually completely forgot about this. I looked it up on YouTube earlier when you sent me the question in an email, because I couldn't remember for the life of me. But yeah, it was an interesting time, that's for sure. And then to see where everybody's ended up, of course, as well.
Yeah, and Josh Matthews was one of the announcers on that too.
That's right. Yeah, not nearly as annoying though.
No.
All right, well, all we've got left to talk about before we get to phone calls is the main event, and it was Ultimate X for the X Division Championship. Low Key defended the title against Trevor Lee and Andrew Everett. This match went about 19 minutes with Low Key picking up the win. I thought this was obviously the match of the night, but I thought just everything about it was really good. I thought everybody was highlighted. I thought everybody had spots in here where they really shined. And I like the finish a lot. I thought it was unique. You know, it's one of those things. It's sort of like Money in a Bank and Hell in a Cell. Like, you've seen these matches so many times, it's hard to come up with unique finishes. I thought that they did a really good job telling a story in this match, especially after Low-Key punched the chair into the face of Trevor Lee and hurt his hand. He couldn't climb the rope because he had the hurt hand, so he climbed up the metal stanchion and slid his way across, climbed down on top of the X, and then ended up stomping Andrew Everett and Trevor Lee, who were both climbing the crisscross X rope to the center of the ring, going for the belt. He stomped them off the rope and then grabbed the belt to retain. I liked a lot about this match, but I like the fact that they told the story, a pretty simple one. Low-Key gets hurt his hand, and how's he going to win the match with a hurt hand? They made it really look like it wasn't going to happen. They put some adversity there, and not only did he find a way to do it, but I thought the ending looked really cool with that finish, with both guys getting kicked off the rope like that, especially Andrew Everett, who basically flat backed from that crisscross rope above the ring, landed flat in his back. I mean, that probably hurt like hell, but just looked really, really impressive.
Yeah, the ending was a fantastic way to end the show. It's one of those moments I can have you on the edge of your seat, because you could imagine any of those three guys winning, and it was just a race, a memorable visual. Yeah, overall, no complaints with that. I mean, for years, the X Division has been overlooked. Putting it in the main event, giving it 20 minutes, like, that's incredible. So right now, Impact is completely blowing away the cruiserweight division. If you want to compare the two, there's just an excitement there, and the fact that they're given the main event slot of the show, that's awesome. That's a great thing that Jared and Mantel are doing with the current promotion.
Yeah, and you know what? It gives a division meaning, like you've said, and it's blowing away anything WWE is doing with their cruiserweight division right now. Not only is that good for the division, but it's good for the overall product, because it means you don't have to have Bobby Lashley on the show every week. And he wasn't on the show tonight. Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards weren't on the show tonight. They were referenced. They set up a match for next week, but they weren't on the show. And if you have a strong X division and a strong women's division and a strong tag team division, you don't have to overexpose and water down some of your better acts. That's what it ultimately comes down to, at least for me, is how well can you fill a show, even if you don't have your top acts on there. And it's just better for everybody. I mean, you can't miss someone if you see him every week. And it's, especially with a 2-hour show, if you have the same guys on every single week, week in and week out, at some point it gets pretty redundant. They've done a really good job of being able to spread things out. And I think it's because they've done things like build up the X division to the point where you can main event with a match like this, and no one's going to question it. And it also helps when you've got three guys in there that just blow it away and really, really deliver on a match that was obviously getting a lot of hype.
Yeah, agreed. They did a fantastic job. And it's so refreshing not to see the same acts every single week. I mean, people may, of course, most people prefer Raw. They prefer SmackDown, but as a whole. But right now, Impact is at least fresher, I would say. I would say there's like no arguing that. And that's a huge – I mean, that's a good reason just to watch in the first place. If you're tired of some of the acts on Raw or SmackDown, that's what they need. They need to give people a reason to give them another chance. And that's one of the strengths going right at the moment.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's been – it's been real refreshing. And like I said, I was a big fan of the show overall. I thought it was one of the better shows that they've aired in a while. All right, well, let's get to phone calls. 515-605-9345. Again, if you want to get on the into the caller queue, you just got to make sure you hit the number 1 while you're on hold. We've got quite a few people on hold. Not everybody is lined up in that caller queue. So if you are waiting to get into the line to talk to us here on the live cast, make sure you hit the number 1 while you are on hold. But let's go to our first caller of the show. It comes from area code 985. 985, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Mike and Andrew. This is Cody from Thibodaux, Louisiana. How are y'all?
Doing good.
Hey, Cody. Not bad. How are you?
I'm good. This is my first time calling an Impact Post show. And I told Andrew this when he was on the midweek flagship with Wade last week. I haven't caught up on the show in a long time, but I really enjoy listening to y'all post-show. helps me, you know, helps keep me on pace with what's going on with Impact. And I just wanted to make like a comment and then just ask you a general question. First off, I listened to Conan's promo from last week, and he had played it on his podcast today, and I really think that he's just that, you know, all time he's very underrated as you know, as a promo guy. He's really like, he's really good on the mic. His maybe some of the content might be a little bit out of whack, but he definitely, you know, he can deliver his lines well. He you know, you can tell he's very passionate about what he's speaking about, and he's really really helping enhance LAX, which you know, you can make an argument that LAX is one of the top draws in Impact right now. But I just wanted to say that real quick, and then I felt that a lot of these matches were just sort of thrown out there. I'm not sure if it's because I haven't, you know, actually watched so long or watched it on a consistent basis, but it seems like for example, you know, EC3 and James Storm, like they had that beatdown last week, and then they just threw him into a match this week, and of course there's nothing wrong with I didn't think there was anything wrong with the hyping of the Ultimate X throughout the show, but I feel like they just kind of threw it out there last week. And I guess you could probably make an exception with Kongo Kong and Braxton Sutter, because I feel like that's enhancing the feud between him and Ali and Oral Van Ness. But maybe it's just me. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah. What are your thoughts on how they booked that? I mean, because Impact's been doing that, I would say, for a while under the Anthem umbrella, where they set something up one week and then they go right to getting that match in the ring the next week. I think we saw it with Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards too. They almost went right away with those two guys into a match. Do you think that throwing those matches together too quickly or could hurt some of these feuds, or do you think that the flow has been okay?
I agree that these matches are thrown out there too quickly. It's nice that they are giving them a week notice. I think not having pay-per-views at the moment, at least, I don't know, 4 or 6 a year, is really, it's hurting them. Because then you kind of question, well, when are we going to throw this match out there? Because they're not doing, like, monthly specials anymore like they were for a while either. So, yeah, I agree on all three of those. Last week I was saying I wish they had hyped out Ultimate X further. And Braxton and Kongo Kong probably should have been bigger within the terms of how much TV time that's taken. And then, especially if there was pay-per-views, EC3 and James Storm should have been, you know, the second from the top match. So, I think it is definitely hurting them that they don't have these big events to build to at the moment.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like they're able to, I'm sure it's a blessing and a curse, because on the flip side, what they're able to do is take some of those matches and spread them out a little bit, instead of saying, okay, we have these 4 big matches that we want to present, and all 4 of them are happening on the same night. You can tell that they're taking some liberties and spreading them out. Even tonight, you know, James Storm and EC3, yes, they had their one-on-one match tonight after the angle last week, but it's still leading to something next week. So it seems like that's playing out a little bit longer. I agree with you that I think Ultimate X could have been played up a little more than just 1 week in advance, but it almost seems like they're not willing to go further than 1 week in advance with any of this stuff. I don't know if they just think it's an attention span thing. I mean, you know, with everybody wanting instant gratification and information's all over the place, maybe they don't want to risk advertising things too far in advance because they think that it can get lost. But you would also think that Impact, of any company, Ring of Honor could do the same thing, but WWE might have a hard time booking something long in advance because guys could get injured, things can happen, you never know. They're live every single week. With Impact, you could theoretically, you're putting 4 or 5 shows in the can every single time that you're running a television taping. You know what's coming, and nothing's going to change it. So you could build things up 2, 3, even 4 weeks in advance. because you've already got those matches in the can. So it's not like you got to worry about somebody getting hurt. It almost seems like a luxury they could afford themselves if they wanted to do that.
Yeah, it would be nice, too, if they just grabbed, like, a couple guys. Like, every time Lashley is going to wrestle or, say, El Patron, then you build it out for sure, 2 or 3 weeks in advance. Just really make them seem like the biggest stars in the company. But it doesn't seem something that they're very interested in doing at the moment.
Yeah, I think you could do it either by guy or you could even do it just with your main event. You know, make sure you're plugging two main events of Impact at a time. So this week you're plugging, hey, next week it's the triple threat match to determine a number one contender. In 2 weeks from tonight, we'll have so-and-so against so-and-so. I mean, at least if you get your main events out there, it could make those main events feel like bigger matches when they do finally hit the ring. Cody, anything else you got for us tonight?
Just to follow up on what you guys are saying, like I do think it's nice that they are giving him some time by giving him a week in advance, even though it could be better. Because, like, on paper, those are some really good feuds that are bringing one on right now, especially Eddie Edwards and Jamie Richards. And I'm actually a fan of the Braxton Sutter, Sally Laurel Van Ness thing. I have like no idea like what the actual foundation of that was, but just from like, you know, reading what's been going on with that in these past few weeks, I've been pretty interested in it, especially with Laurel Van Ness's crazy character. But I also did want to say, I'm not a fan of the authority figures like showing up on television every so often. For some reason, especially Bruce Pritchard, for some reason, he just doesn't seem like the type of person I would want to see on my television if I were watching the show. Just by what he's saying, I don't know if it's because maybe he's not like saying the right things or saying more or less. And then of course, Karen Jarrett too. I feel like a lot of what these shows that we watch, like, I think they could benefit from what NXT is doing, like pre-tape like one or two, maybe even just one, on air authority figure segment a week, and just let that be their present. I don't know, what do you guys think?
Yeah, they could do that. I mean, they could certainly do that. And they seem like, I think with Impact right now, almost everything that gets set up, they feel the need to have an authority figure do it. You know, you saw Karen Jarrett set up the mixed tag next week. You saw Bruce Pritchard set up the triple threat match. But I don't think everything needs to come. Or even last week, Dutch Mantel, I think, was the one that announced Ultimate X was coming back. I don't think you need to have some type of authority figure announce everything. I think you could certainly just have your announcer say it. Hey, you know, as the match is going on, or even cut away to the announcers at the table and say, I've just been informing my headset that next week we're going to have Alicia Edwards and Eddie Edwards against Davey Richards and Angelina Love. And it can be done in 3-4 seconds. It doesn't have to be backstage. It doesn't have to interview with an authority figure. Just, this is what I've been told, you know, the board has told me, the board of directors has just informed me that next week we're going to see this. I think you could do stuff like that and also shorten up the amount of time it takes to deliver that message. Because, yeah, you know, I'd agree with you, especially with Impact right now, you've got so many of them. I know it's something Andrew and I have talked about this. Who's in charge? Is Bruce Pritchard in charge? Is Karen Jarrett in charge? Is Dutch Mantel in charge? Because they all seem to be making decisions. So where does the buck stop? That's the one thing that to me, from that authority standpoint, is a little confusing on Impact right now, is there doesn't seem to be one person that's in charge of everything. Andrew, what are your thoughts on how they've been delivering those messages? And I know we've talked about this before, but are the three authority figures too much? You know, should they try to simplify that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. Tonight I was kind of struck by, Bruce Pritchard has one of the most popular wrestling podcasts out there. Hundreds of thousands of people listen to it, but whenever he comes out, he doesn't get any sort of pop. So I don't know if that's just, it's not a crossover between those two audiences, or people just aren't connecting with his character at the moment. I think what I would do is have, and this isn't great, but I would do Jeff Jarrett plays a Jack Tunney role. He shows up once every 2 or 3 months, makes a big announcement, and that's it. Because I think some of the loyal Impact fans do have a fondness for him. They think of him as like the father figure of the promotion. So I would much rather see him make the occasional announcement than Karen just randomly show up every week for 30 seconds.
Yeah, you know, you could also build that up too, sort of the way that WWE does when Vince's going to be on the show. You know, it's the boss is here. What is he going to say? And after you've done it two or three times, obviously spacing it out, you know, enough, the story can be, okay, he's here again. Last time he was here, we all know what, we all remember what happened. What's he going to announce this time? And as long as you keep delivering with them being pretty big messages, that could be something that they could build a show around. You know, I don't like having main events being talking segments, but if it's a big enough announcement, I think it does work from time to time.
Yeah, no, I think that'd be a good way of going about it. Just always reinforce that when he shows up, it's for a really big, important reason.
All right, awesome. Anything else you want to add?
No, I just that. Thank you guys for taking my call. And I want to give a quick shout out to Greg Parks and Kenny from Dallas in Tennessee, who I hope are watching the game 4 of the Predators and the Ducks.
Yeah, I actually have that on mute here, watching that as we record the show. Awesome. Hey, we appreciate the phone call, and feel free to call us back any time next week.
Hey, no problem, guys.
All right, let's go to a break, and then we'll come back. We've got some more callers in the line, so we'll go to a quick break and then come back with more phone calls here on the Impact post-show edition of the P-Torch Livecast.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch Livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com, or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com.
All right, back here in the PW Torch Livecast Impact Post Show, 515-605-9345. Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek with you talking this week's edition of Impact Wrestling. Let's go right back to the phones. Kylan in New Jersey is up next. Kylan, how are you?
I'm very well, Mike. How are you and Andrew doing this week?
Doing good.
No complaints, I don't think.
None from me either.
What's on your mind tonight, Kylan?
First off, I would just like to say that this was a very enjoyable show for me anyway, but I would like to highlight a couple of specific points before I get into my questions.
Sure thing.
First thing I would like to say is, I like the fact that Impact actually tells you what matches are going to happen for the following week, which gives you some semblance of a sense of, we actually know what the heck we're doing around here, whereas WWE just kind of said, people will watch anyway because we've been around so long that nobody cares that we don't actually give them incentives to watch for the following week.
I absolutely agree.
And my second point that I would like to make is, as you said earlier, Mike, I like the fact that we didn't have to see Bobby Lashley this week, because that lessens the possibility of burning not only him out in terms of dates, but we don't have to be sick of seeing him or hearing a possibly lackluster but improved promo from him.
Yeah, you know, it's not his strong suit for sure, and I think that they've done a pretty good job, and we've talked about, you know, keeping him off the air, which are going to make his appearances feel bigger and more special. And I think we talked about it in the past, where you think back to you know, the mid to late 80s, Hulk Hogan was not on TV every week on WWF TV at the time. You know, if you were watching Superstars or you were watching primetime wrestling, like, it just, he wasn't on, you know, maybe a quick interview or something like that, but he certainly wasn't wrestling. But you had to pay to watch Hulk Hogan wrestle. And I think I don't know if they're trying to do the same thing with Lashley, keeping him off TV, but I find it to be similar, and I think it works. You know, it's going to make those appearances feel more special.
Yeah, for all you can criticize about Jeff Jarrett and Dutch Mantel's booking, they certainly make the bigger things seem more important, which some of the previous booking regimes have not done over the years.
Absolutely, yeah, no, they have. They've done a good job of building up their main events and their main event guys.
So the first question that I have for this week is, if Josh Matthews does, in fact, lose this proposed tag team match, what role would he go into, or would that mean his contract was expiring and he'd probably leave to go do, I don't know, Nashville Hot Country Radio or something?
You know, I don't think his contract's up. I don't know for sure. It's just a guess. I would imagine they put him into another role. I know Andrew and I have talked about it in the past. I think he'd be good as a heel mouthpiece manager for someone. Andrew, what do you think is the case here? I mean, we obviously don't know the contract status. Maybe it is that Josh Matthews' contract is up. But I believe he started the beginning of the year when he originally debuted. I think it was he debuted at the first Destination America tapings, which were like January of 2015. So I don't think his deal would be up in the middle of the year. I would imagine it would be, you know, the end of the year. Maybe it could expire in the middle of the year. Who knows? But my assumption is that they would just move him into another role, that he would still be under contract. Do you believe to be the same thing, Andrew?
Yeah, for sure. He does a lot of writing for their website as well. He does, I think he has a show on there with Madison Rayne now. I would assume he'll be around in some role for some time. I liked your idea earlier of pairing him potentially with Congo Kong. Or I'd like to see him maybe with Madison Rayne, be the mouthpiece for her. What got me thinking tonight is if he is done at Slammiversary on commentary, they should really, really make an effort to get Mauro Ranallo, because I think his deal comes up in August, so that would be a big move for them.
August 12th. I was actually just reading that earlier today. I believe his contract expires. So I would not be opposed to that whatsoever. I know, you know, for a while we were fantasizing about Jim Ross signing. Obviously, he's back with WWE now under contract, and I, is calling the UK tournament that's coming up tomorrow on WWE Network. But I would not be opposed at all to Mauro Ranallo calling Impact Wrestling. He obviously still has a passion for wrestling, and you would think that Impact's television taping schedule would make it much easier for Mauro Ranallo to continue to do the other things that he does in the boxing and MMA world. Kylan, anything else you got in your mind tonight?
My phone, the main event of Bound for Glory will be this year, and will Bound for Glory be the official merger or name change into Global Force Wrestling if it's not going to be at Slammiversary?
That's an interesting question. You know, I think that they are going to merge at Slammiversary. I think that's where they're heading. I'd be surprised if that gets drawn out any more than that. As for main events, potential main events for Bound for Glory, you know, I don't see them taking the belt off of Bobby Lashley at Slammiversary. I don't know if you agree, Andrew. I think they'll keep the belt on Bobby Lashley there only because they haven't really done much to make me believe he's going to lose it, no matter who he's up against. They haven't done much to make me think that he's going to lose that title. So then it becomes, if he doesn't lose it at Slammiversary, I think you'll see him keep it to Bound for Glory. I think they're going to keep the belt on him for a while, make him their, you know, their Brock Lesnar, their long, their big monster MMA crossover long-term champion. And then the question becomes, who unseats him? You know, who at Bound for Glory, which babyface could unseat him and really, really take the reins? Who's going to be ready by then on the babyface side of things? And I don't really know who that guy is. You know, I don't know if they want to put the money behind James Storm. I would think, and of course they're having him go heel right now, so it might be hard to do so. I think there's money in a Lashley Magnus match with Lashley as the babyface, but my guess, if I had to put money on it right now, would be that they go with a multi-person match at Slammiversary that Lashley retains, but El Patron comes close. And then the main event for Bound for Glory is Lashley against El Patron. One-on-one, El Patron has the win over Lashley that got reversed. Whatever they do at Slammiversary could be El Patron getting screwed over in some way, shape, or form by a third guy in a triple threat or something like that. And then Bound for Glory is finally the one-on-one return match, Lashley against El Patron for the world title. That's where I think they'll go. Andrew, do you see them going in any different direction than that, or do you think we'll end up with an El Patron Lashley Bound for Glory main event, which is, I mean, we haven't hit the Slammiversary yet, but Bound for Glory is only about 4 months away.
Yeah, off the top of my head, I wanted to say James Storm, too, that they'll do, and I don't think it's a great pick at this point because they just had a match a few weeks ago on TV, but maybe they can heat him up again, make him, there's an interesting story they could tell, the Cowboys coming back for one last big fight, and, you know, he wants to get the title again. But yeah, they really need some more top baby faces at the moment. I question them turning Magnus, because I think, like you said, he could have potentially been that guy. I just don't see Patron. Maybe they'll do that, Patron and Lashley. But yeah, there, nothing really stands out to me right now in their terms of like a WrestleMania main event. But they should be thinking of it. I can't picture who it would be.
Yeah. And they've got a lot of time. Obviously, who knows? I mean, maybe they even sign somebody between now and then. At one point it looked like they were going to put Moose on a collision course with Bobby Lashley. Maybe it's Moose and Lashley one-on-one. Maybe they can do some building there. Who knows? So, there's a long way between now and then, even though you know, these Impact pay-per-views, June and October, they're sort of squished together with not much else going on, you know, the rest of the calendar year. Anything else on your mind tonight, Kylan?
Yeah. And final question. Have we seen our last Jeff Jarrett match, or do you think that he believes he can have a final run in his company?
I don't think we've seen the last of Jeff Jarrett. Andrew, how about you? Do you think we'll see him wrestle again here at some point?
Oh, man, now I'm afraid it's going to be Jarrett versus Lashley. I'm all for glory. Yes, I would say 95% chance he'll wrestle a match within the next, probably 2 weeks. I mean, he could stay away another year, but I would say next year or two, he will come back in some form to wrestle.
Yeah, you know, I can almost, especially with Karen involved, you would think that at some point someone's going to do something to her, and then Jeff Jarrett will come riding in on the white horse to defend his wife and his company. I could see certainly something like that playing out. But yeah, I don't think we've seen the last of him. I think it's just a matter of him finding someone that he wants to work with, you know, and when he gets excited, I'm sure he's going to put himself in there because he's wrestled in the past. I mean, he's been active. It's not like he hasn't been wrestling. I don't think he's going to put himself in the world title picture. You never know. But I think that I think he's smart enough to know at this point he can't be involved in the world title picture. You know, I think what will draw him back will be some sort of personal issue, some type of personal issue storyline. And, you know, he'll act for that one pay-per-view match, and then he'll be like Triple H. You know, he could be their Triple H in the sense that he'll come back for one personal grudge match and then go away for 6 months. And then maybe he comes back for another one when they need him to, and then he can go away for 6 months. I don't think he'll be a regular part of the active roster, but I could see him, you know, floating in and out for some big matches when it calls for it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking.
I mean, he's there. It just sort of makes too much sense, especially, you know, if he's running the show. I'm sure he still thinks that he has some value to the roster and to the television show. It makes sense that he'd use himself at some point.
Yeah, I think he's. I think he envisions himself as the Triple H of the company. So I think, like Hunter, he's just going to wait until somebody heats up enough. I don't know who that. Yeah. You know, next time they come across an AJ Styles or Samoa Joe, he'll step back in the ring.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Kylan, man, anything else you got for us tonight?
Anybody know what Mike Tenay is doing these days, just out of curiosity?
What was that? Sorry, my connection cut out. I couldn't hear what you said.
I said, do either of you know what Mike Tenay is doing these days, just out of curiosity?
I don't. Andrew, do you know what he's up to? The last I heard, I don't know if it's still active. He was hosting a podcast, I think on Podcast One at one point. It had nothing to do with wrestling. It had to do with gambling and sports betting, I believe. I don't know if he's still doing that or not, but do you have any idea what he's up to right now, Andrew?
No, I haven't heard from him in months. I'm actually surprised that he hasn't showed up in some form, like as a backstage interviewer or something, because Don West is still on every week. But yeah, I bet he will show up in some form, you know, even if it's like a Bound for Glory as a, you know, just to be a part of that heritage and the history. But yeah, what he's doing these days, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I Googled him quickly. He was hosting a podcast. It wasn't for Podcast One. It was through CBS Radio, their Play.it platform. And he announced almost a year ago, in June of 2016, that he was not able to reach an agreement with CBS for a second year of podcast. So he did a full year of podcasting for CBS Radio and hasn't been doing it for a year. So what he's been up to lately, I have no idea. But yeah, especially Jeff Jarrett, there's a connection there, obviously, too. So maybe if they stick with the three-man booth, you know, I'd be fine with Mike Tenay being involved. Checking out Mike Tenay's Twitter here, he has not tweeted since Christmas Eve when he wished everybody a Merry Christmas. So as for what he's been up to, I have no idea, Kylan.
We need to find him.
Oh, well, since you said that, somebody should check to make sure he's okay, but...
Yeah, you know what? I'm looking through here, and it looks like he's done... I mean, he's still living in Las Vegas, it seems, according to his Twitter feed. It looked like he did some work for the LA Kings when they had an exhibition game in Vegas in the fall, did some work in the penalty box as a timekeeper. Oh, you know, his background is there in the casino industry too. So he might just be working, you know, a private job in the casino industry. I'm really not sure, but I would not be at all opposed to a Mike Tenay, some type of involvement on the announced team again. I mean, to be quite honest with you, I don't think Pope has been as bad as he was when he first started at Color. And that could just be that Josh Matthews makes him seem less annoying than he actually is. But I'd be okay with just a straight, you know, Mike Tenay, Josh Matthews book. Three-person booth with Tenay, not Josh Matthews, with Tenay, Borash, and the Pope, or I'd be fine with just Borash and Tenay, you know, as a two-man sort of, you get the two announcers at that point, but I think both of those guys have been around long enough that they could carry themselves as a color commentator in a role similar to the way, I mean, Jim Ross was doing that on SmackDown at one point, where I think he was with Todd Grisham, and he was sort of the color guy, not the play-by-play guy. I think you could do something like that, too. So I would not be opposed to him being involved in some way, shape, or form. And, Andrew, I think we've talked about him in the past. I don't think you would be either.
Yeah, if he wanted to go back and do, like, what he did in WCW, where he would just jump in with all these random facts about wrestlers and provide their backstories, I'd be fine with having him back on TV. I don't think he should be lead play-by-play, but I think, I'd be fine if he had any sort of role in the promotion.
Yeah, I like that idea of it being sort of like the impact, the role he had in WCW. He was almost sort of like the statistician for Nitro. You know, he'd jump in with, like you said, these facts, these figures. He was sort of like the historian where he would come in and give you a lot of background on guys, and I think that could be a nice addition to their announced team. All right, Kylan, we appreciate the call, man.
All right. Thanks for having me back. We'll talk next week.
Sounds good. Kylan drops off. We've only got about 15 minutes left in the show, so we're going to take our last quick timeout, and then Andrew and I will quickly give you the three things we liked about this episode of Impact on the other side of the break. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast Impact Post Show.
Do you love pro wrestling, Torch? Then we've got another show just for you, Ring Rust Radio.
Ring Rust Radio breaks down the hottest topics and news from around the wrestling world, including WWE Raw, SmackDown, and pay-per-views, TNA, Lucha Underground, New Japan, and indie wrestling. Add in interviews with the biggest names in the industry, like Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Paul Heyman, Kurt Angle, and many more. And Ring Rust Radio has something for everyone.
Check out the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Interact with us on Twitter at Ringrust Radio and email us at ringrustradio@yahoo.com.
All right, back in the PW Torch Livecast, we are rapidly running out of time. So Andrew and I will give you the three things we liked about this episode of Impact Wrestling. Andrew, what did you have as the number three thing you liked about this show?
My number three, this is pretty random. This was during the opening match. Both Garza Jr. and Laredo Kid were in the ring, and Ortiz walked up to him and just started slapping him. And this spot, like in other promotions, the babyfaces would just kick the crap out of the guy, and it'd be like a comedy spot. But he actually like took it to him, And I think he knocked one of them out of the ring. So it just made him look like more of a badass than other promotions would. It just kind of stood out to me in a random way.
Yeah, my number three thing also came from this match. I had Diamante's Hurricane Run off the top rope as Garza, and it took him down to the outside. It led to the finish, and I think, you know, I like the way that they waited to have the involvement from the outside come to lead to a finish. That's something that I think gets lost sometimes, where you've got the manager or the rest of the stable on the outside, and there's three or four different times where they get involved over the course of the match, and it loses meaning. Here they had the involvement from Diamante. It led to the finish. You know, she didn't get involved. No one else got involved until it led to a finish. I thought that was smart. You know, I remember hearing an interview with Kevin Nash a while ago where he talked about that when he was with Shawn Michaels back in like 94, 93. He talked about, you know, a summer that they went on tour where it was Shawn Michaels and Scott Hall, Razor Ramon, every night, and Diesel was on the outside. And he said, you know, that was his history lesson. That's where he learned. But more importantly, one of the things that really resonated with me, and I remember, is he said that they limited his involvement on the outside, and everything he did led to the finish of the match. And it made his involvement seem bigger. Everything he did every night led to the finish. It wasn't just something that was thrown in there. It led to a result. And I thought it was smart to have that happen here, too, with the LAX interference. What do you have as the number two thing on your list?
Number two, we already talked about this a bit, the X Division video that they showed. I just wanted to bring that up again. That was really, really strong production work. If you've seen, like, the Roderick Strong NXT stuff, I felt it, along with that, it's the best work that's come out of a wrestling promotion in the past few months. Just tying in that lineage, making it seem so important to all the wrestlers and everyone wanting to win that title. It's just, we need more of that stuff, but it was just excellent.
Yeah, that was actually the number one thing that I had on my list of things I liked about this episode. And I think we mentioned this last week or the week before, but that's something that's been really noticeable since Anthem has taken over. The production level of these types of videos has gone up tremendously. And they seem to be airing more of them, especially, you know, definitely more of them tying into the lineage of TNA and what it meant at the beginning, things like this. I don't know if it's the production people that they've hired back or new people that they've brought on, but these types of videos, especially the one tonight, have been home runs, and I think really add a lot. And they've really, to me, they've taken that type of production level to new heights under this new ownership. What was the number one thing? Actually, I'm sorry, the number two thing I had on my list also had to do with that match, and it was just the simple storyline of Loki putting his hand through a chair, and that resonated throughout the rest of the match. You know, that was the thread that was sort of needled through the entire match. Early on, he punches the chair into Trevor Lee's face, his hands hurt, and then I thought Jeremy Borash and Pope did a really good job playing up, okay, how is he going to be able to climb that rope and retain the title if he has a broken hand or if he's injured his hand? At one point, he took the glove off, and I don't remember if it was Jeremy Borash or the Pope, but one of them said, hey, look, Loki just had to take his glove off because his hand was swelling up so much from when he punched that chair. It was really simple, but it puts that little doubt in the viewer's mind as you're watching the show with, yeah, how is this guy, how is he going to overcome this if he can't climb the rope to retain the title? They did they had him do it in a really unique way, but I thought it was really good and really simple to just tell that story. He's hurt his hand. How is he going to do it? You know, it's been done for a million years, whether it's a wrestler working over a specific body part or a guy's injured coming into a match. This happened to be, you know, the quote unquote injury happened during the match, but I just thought that was really, really well done the way that they played that up and put that little seed of doubt in the back of your mind before you watch Loki come out in the end. What was the number one thing you liked about this episode?
The number one is, I guess, involves that match as well. I'm just going with the fact that they put the Ultimate X in the main event. Right now, it feels like it should be, but in the past, they would throw that match out there all the time to start the show or just in the middle of the show. It meant nothing. It was just a thing that they could throw out there, sometimes not even a week in advance. And it was very disappointing. So they built it a week out ahead of time, which is, like we said, kind of good for them, but it should be doing better. But it is very refreshing to see the X Division finally get some much-needed prestige, get placed where it should, and they delivered. It was a great match and just ended the night on a hot note.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I already said my number one thing that I liked was the video that came along with it, but I thought that the Ultimate X match altogether, the hype to it over the course of this show, and then the match itself really, really delivered in a big way. Anything else you want to add before we get out of here for this week? I know I was on PW Podcast earlier today. There's a lot going on over there. Anything else you want to add on the live cast here today before we get out of here?
Sure. Yeah. I'll just, over on pwpodcast.com, X-Pac, 123360, that should, a recap of that, with Sean Stasiak should be up, on the site, pretty soon, probably once I'm done, here. Steve Austin Unleashed, I think will be on later tonight or early tomorrow. And then the usual, Jim Ross, Bruce Pritchard, Eric Bischoff. So tons of stuff. Check it out this weekend. Check it out tomorrow. We will have a bunch of recaps, coming in.
Awesome. Check that out on our sister site at pwpodcast.com. You have been listening to the PW Torch Livecast Impact Post Show with Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek. We're here every Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern as soon as Impact goes off the air. Tomorrow night, Bruce Mitchell and Rich Van have the primetime edition of the show. Sunday night, after Backlash, there'll be a post-pay-per-view edition of the PW Torch Livecast. Wade Keller, editor of PW Torch, will be here on Monday with the Raw Post Show. Wade's back on Tuesday with the SmackDown post show. On Wednesday, Wade will have a guest on the midweek flagship in the afternoon. It was Jason Powell of ProWrestling.net this week. And then Wade's back on Thursday in the afternoon with Interview Thursday. Today he had former WWE creative team member Kevin Eck, who also wrote for the Baltimore Sun for a long time, covered pro wrestling, and now blogs on pro wrestling. You could check out his interview with Wade on the PW Torch Livecast from earlier today. And then next Thursday night, it'll be Andrew and I again here in the PW Torch Livecast. So thank you guys for listening. We'll talk again next week as soon as Impact goes off the air. But before we get out of here for this week, just a couple more minutes and a couple of words on PW Torch VIP. If you haven't gone PW Torch VIP, you can do so at pwtorch.com/govip. Here's a little bit about all the benefits you will get when you go VIP here at PW Torch.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch Livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch Livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to pwtorchvip.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip.
All right, so that'll do it for this week's edition of the PW Torch Livecast. As Andrew said, make sure you check out pwpodcast.com. Check out the show tomorrow night, Sunday night, and every day here at PW Torch Livecast. And, of course, check out pwtorch.com as well. Once again, that'll do it for this week's edition of the Impact Post Show. Thank you guys for calling. Thank you guys for listening. Andrew and I will talk to you next week right here in the PW Torch Livecast.